Afternoon Drive with Goodman and Mason, presented by Silter Har Mazda. A no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Andrew.
And good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Afternoon Drive. Goodman Mason. Watch us, milehighsports.com. You can reach us. Rocky Mountain Forest Products Twitter feed, at Mace Denver, at Eric Goodman. If you are looking for wholesale lumber to the public, go to rmfp.com. In the meantime, we are giving away $200 in slot play to Sasquatch Casino up in Blackhawk. First four callers are going to get that in the second hour of the show. If you've won in the past, not eligible to win again. While you're up there, you can see an autographed by Vitton 700 horsepower Mustang RTR. Yeah, you can win that thing because they're giving it away. If you don't want it, you're going to get nearly $28,000 in cash instead. Grand prize drawing is September 25th and 26th. Mace, how are you?
All right. I am in reasonably good health. Can't say that for the Broncos.
Oh, jeez, you worried me for a second.
No, but I'm just saying we can't say that for the Broncos right now.
No, they're starting to get a little banged up. We were, you know, looking at the opener, and Bradley Chubb was hobbled, and now we have two more guys. One because of the game, for sure, because we saw it on the field. I think, at least to me, I was a little bit surprised about Darby being injured. I didn't realize he was even injured.
Didn't realize it either. I mean, he played all the way through the game.
Yep.
Seems like he suffered the injury late and played through it.
Right.
And he didn't make it any better, and now going on the short-term injury reserve list along with Jerry Jeudy.
All right, with that, time now for the lead.
The lead is presented by Marco's Pizza in Aurora, where everything is fresh, never frozen, like the dough and sauces to go with hand-cut meats and veggies. Order today at either location, off Smoky Hill Road or Quincy in Aurora.
Okay, so just talked about it a moment ago. Ronald Darby on the injured reserve list with a hamstring injury that could cause him to miss at least 3 weeks and will reportedly leave him week to week after that. Pat Surtain now expected to step into the starting lineup. So, do you look at this news as if the Broncos could be in a little bit of trouble, or can you make the case Surtain is an upgrade?
Not based on what we saw Sunday.
Yeah, Darby was pretty good.
Yeah, and Pat Surtain was beaten on the touchdown.
It's one play.
It's one play, yes, but it's a teachable moment.
Yeah.
And it was one play that...
He missed a tackle.
Yeah,
he
can't miss a tackle. Tackling's the non-negotiable to play in a Vic Fangio defense.
I understand that, but if he was confused by what he should have been playing, that's fixable too. I get it, but that means if he was playing in a wrong spot, that makes me go back to what Vic Fangio said a couple of weeks ago, which was he may have stunted Surtain's growth because he's trying to teach him many different positions.
And now he can focus on one, presumably. He's going to go play outside.
Yeah, but here's the problem.
But that's going to, and that will probably help him long term because he's going to be an outside corner going forward. That's his career spot. And I think as he plays more over the next few weeks, what happened Sunday will get farther in the rearview mirror and will be a teachable moment for him. Didn't cost the Broncos a game, and I think he'll be fine long term.
But you do kind of think he's trying to learn three different jobs. You know, it's the old saying, you're a jack of all trades and you're a master of none. Right? Now he's going to be playing on the outside, which is where he will likely be playing for the majority of his career. But he probably only understands, and I'm speculating here, a third of how that position is played, because he learned another position at a third, another position at a third. I'm not suggesting he's being thrown into the fire.
He's going to learn by doing.
Well, he will have to. But again, on what he was beaten on, it was a tackle. It was a missed tackle. That's what it was.
It was a missed tackle, but he was trailing as well. Sterling Shepard ran a nice route.
Right.
And beat him coming across the field. It wasn't just the tackle.
So
it was a play that happens to rookies at all stripes. I mean, you look around the league and look at how many rookies had rookie moments over the course of the weekend. Trevor Lawrence certainly did. So did Zach Wilson. Even Mac Jones did. Alex Leatherwood last night, first round tackle, nearly cost the Raiders the game with some penalties in the way he played. This is you know, you can come from Alabama or, you know, a school where they're doing things in a pro manner, and it doesn't mean you're ready out of the gates for the NFL. There are going to be some rough games, but I think you'll learn from it.
If I would have told you before the start of the season, and, you know, I'm giving you a layup right here, what two position groups do the Broncos have the most depth?
Corner and receiver.
And now it's being tested, is it? It's as if the football gods aligned and said, "Ah, George, you're getting phone calls on cornerbacks, are you? Well, you might need some of that depth with that." So who's the fourth cornerback now? Ojemudia?
When he comes back.
Right.
He's not back yet.
Right. How about a Sang Bassey?
Not back from the
pup yet. Isn't that interesting?
He's out there every
maybe
day.
Maybe George is calling teams.
He's out there with the injured reserve guys working their way back on the field, but he's not. But when you're on the pup, you're not eligible to come back until mid-October.
So who's your guy? Whoa. That was quite a non-statement statement.
Or
who is your guy?
I actually think your guy, when you go dime, because you had Pat Surtain working.
Simmons.
No, your guy, Green maybe Jackson. It's Justin Strnad. Because Surtain goes outside. Now you're looking for somebody to line up inside. So it's the guy you believe to be your best coverage linebacker.
Well, he might as well be a rookie.
Yes.
He might as well be a rookie.
I would think that the beneficiary of this in playing time is going to be Strnad.
Well, who would you rather have covering tight end? Strnad? Or Surtain?
Long-term Strnad,
no,
I think.
No, Sunday. This isn't long-term.
Well, for this game, I'm not really worried about the Jags at tight end. I'll have Strnad. I think you'll be fine.
Well, I got news for you. When you look at the last 3-4 years, I don't care if you lined up a tight end. You were catching passes and getting yards against this Broncos defense because they had nobody. Now, if you look at the schedule ahead, the next time they really play stud wide receiver is a guy we watched yesterday, Darren Waller, a guy who, by the way, John Gruden called the greatest player he has ever coached.
No pressure.
Of course, he has also coached John Lynch,
Jerry
Hall
Rice.
Of Famer. Jerry Rice.
I mean, if you say Jerry Rice right there, he coached Jerry Rice.
At the tail end of his career.
Yeah, but...
At the tail end of his career.
He's coached Jerry Rice.
So did Mike Shanahan.
Yeah, you can
argue... so did Mike Shanahan.
You can argue that Shanahan also coached Rice in his prime in 94 when he was offensive coordinator. You can argue that Jerry Rice is the greatest player to play the game.
I understand that.
So the fact that when he's... So John...
Jerry Rice...
John Gruden saying that shows that he has the memory of a flea.
Okay. Jerry Rice is not the best player John Gruden has ever coached. You can make the case for Mike Shanahan when he was with San Francisco. But don't tell me, who was the Broncos head coach when Tony Dorsett was the running back?
Dan Reeves.
Okay. Is Tony Dorsett the greatest running back he has ever coached?
Quite possibly, because Dan Reeves also was on the coaching staff in Dallas when they won a Super Bowl with Tony Dorsett as a star player.
I'm talking about when, let's just say,
come on,
he wasn't with Dallas. You know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know what I mean.
Well,
if you're talking about the moment,
no. If you're talking about the player's body of work, yes.
Yeah. So, I'm sorry, Jerry Rice doesn't qualify when he was with Oakland. He was good.
Thanks.
But he wasn't Jerry Rice.
Well, you know, you just want to take my point and beat it to a pulp. Fine, you just did that. Congratulations.
Okay. Well,
hope that felt good.
Well, John Lynch... Warren Sapp, whole bunch of Hall of Famers, but that is high praise. The point is they don't face Waller to the 17th of October, so they might catch a break.
They face Mark Andrews before then, though.
And he might have a Hall of Fame day.
You know, the funny thing with the Ravens, even though they certainly, in some ways, look beatable, because, and clearly, for example... They missed Marcus Peters last night.
Yep.
The Raiders exposed that.
Did they have safeties playing that game? I missed it because I didn't see any out there.
Yeah.
At least where they should have been standing.
Yeah, it was a lot of cover zero.
Yeah.
In that game.
Yeah.
So they were exposed in the secondary. The thing with the Ravens though is they still look like a really dangerous team and a real problem for the Broncos when they come on the schedule in Week 4. Even though it's possible the Ravens may be 1-2 coming into that game because they have the Chiefs on Sunday. Mark Andrews and Lamar Jackson making plays with his feet.
Yeah.
These things are problems, especially.
Why did the Ravens lose that game yesterday?
Why'd
they lose that game? It was the craziest ending I might have ever seen in any sport.
In the end, they lost
because Lamar Jackson.
They lost the game because Lamar Jackson was in the pocket and didn't hold on to the ball.
This is where
if the Ravens learn from that, they may tell Lamar, all right, just in the short term, especially against a team that has a good pass rush. The Raiders have a very good pass rush, and it showed. They were winning up front. Baltimore's offensive line is a concern right now. But this is where Greg Roman and John Harbaugh may tell Lamar, take off a little sooner than maybe we've been coaching you to, because that's going to be the way that we have to compensate for the issues up front.
What about the first fumble?
I think Baltimore.
Was the first fumble hanging out in the pocket too much?
I think Baltimore will adjust.
Sure they will. Was the first fumble caused by him staying in the pocket too much?
No. But the second fumble was.
It was. He fumbled twice. And to me, that has always been a concern about Lamar Jackson. We can get into that game in a couple of weeks. It's great that he runs the ball. You know, you and I both watched the Manning brothers yesterday, and they all talked about how Lamar Jackson slides, avoids contact. Dude, you better hold on to the ball, because now people are going to be targeting that ball even more.
He's always had the propensity to put the ball on the ground. What happened last night was, he fumbled twice and they lost it twice. Usually when you fumble twice, you lose it once. Not last night. So it was a little bit of bad luck. A little bit of bad luck for them. He still is somebody that's going to cause problems.
Coming up after the break, let's talk about the other position that has so much depth. The wide receiver position, which will be tested. I would say the Broncos have some challenges with the cornerback position, because who is really cornerback number five? As you pointed out, Mace, you have a couple of guys who aren't ready to play. But offensively, the Broncos should be able to adjust without Jerry Jeudy. We'll tell you why next.
Afternoon Drive with Goodman and Mason, presented by Silter Har Mazda, a no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Andrew.
Welcome back. Afternoon Drive, Goodman Mason. Watch us, milehighsports.com. You can reach us, Rocky Mountain Forest Products Twitter feed, at Mace Denver, at Eric Goodman. If you're looking for wholesale lumber to the public, go to rmfp.com. I want to tell you about Mighty Plumbing, Heating, and Air. I got my HVAC unit from them, and boy, my experience was nothing short of fantastic. I gave them a 5-star Google review. They have over 400 5-star Google reviews. And right now, boy, do they have a deal going on right now. You can save up to $4,000 on an exclusive Mighty and Rudd heating air replacement offer. Rudd, best parts out there. Plus, you're going to get a 7-day vacation as well. You're going to get a voucher to one of 4,500 incredible locations. And somebody actually was able to take advantage of that. Here is the testimonial. My fiance and I reached out to Mighty Plumbing and Heating as we used them a few months ago on another project. Had a great experience. When the salesman Zachary came out, he looked at our water heater, said we have some good news and some bad news. The bad news, needed a new water heater, needed to be replaced. The good news was that with the purchase of a new water heater, they were going to throw in a week stay at a resort of our choice. The timing was great, as we were getting ready to get married next year, and we have Hawaii on top of our list for honeymoon getaways. And guess what? They are going to be going to Hawaii on their honeymoon because of this voucher, because they worked with Mighty Plumbing, Heating, and Air. The testimonial ends, thank you, Mighty Plumbing, Heating, and Air. The vacation helped us feel better about the price of the water heater and made us value their company and want to continue using them for all of our future plumbing and heating. This testimonial, my testimonial. Mighty Plumbing, Heating, and Air, they are the best. Time now for The Buzz.
The Buzz is presented by Mighty Plumbing and Heating. Why does Mighty Plumbing and Heating have nearly 150 5-star reviews? No one has better service, and they will meet or beat any written offer. Go to mightyph.com.
Well, Pat Shurmur was certainly creative with his game plan against the Giants. He had three wideouts, typical for him with one running back. He also used two tight end sets. He also used three tight end sets. So now with Jerry Jeudy out, should the Broncos make the two tight end formation? It's a staple in their offense. Mm-hmm. But should we call it, maybe it should be their base offense.
It's their best look right now. It's their best package. And the thing is, when you have two very good pass-catching tight ends, you can actually be dynamic in a two tight end offense when you have Noah Fant and Albert Okwuegbunam on running routes. We talked about covering tight ends in the last segment. There aren't many teams that have the ability to cover one good pass catching tight end.
Right.
Let alone two. Now, Okwuegbunam, he's still coming along. He's not there yet, but he's shown some flashes. But Noah Fant on Sunday looked like one of the better tight ends in football. Six catches, 62 yards. He's on the same page with Teddy Bridgewater. He's been on the same page with Bridgewater since the start of OTAs.
So,
it gives you the personnel to run with.
You were at the game, and you know the TV cameras are not focusing on Cortland Sutton. Mm-hmm. I know that you like to use binoculars to look at the cheerleaders. But when you are watching,
there are no cheerleaders in New York.
But when you are watching the game, and you get a close-up view, did you notice what I noticed, that Cortland Sutton was hobbling a little bit?
Same thing in training camp, too.
Yep. I don't think he's totally back.
Yeah.
So now you have Jeudy out. Cortland Sutton certainly is not 100% healthy. You have Hamler.
You have Tim Patrick. Tim Patrick's also going to get more targets.
Right.
Because of this. He might make himself a lot of money in the next few weeks.
Well, hopefully KJ Hamler becomes a target and catches the ball in the end zone when he's wide open.
Yeah.
That would help.
That would help.
It would also help if Albert O doesn't fumble the ball at the 5-yard line. But I digress.
Young players make mistakes. The thing with KJ Hamler is, historically, and this goes back to when he was at Penn State, a high drop rate is something you're going to have to live with. That speed is going to get him open a lot.
Right.
You can't counter that. But he's also generally going to drop about one of every 7 or 8 passes that's on target. And this goes back to when he was at Penn State. And he's not a huge hand receiver. Like, you know, some guys have catcher's mitts. He doesn't have that. That's not him. Drops are probably something you're going to have to live with him.
People say to me all the time, do you bet on sports? And I'm not some huge sports bettor, but with the information that we know and the information that the fans know, especially when it comes to fantasy football, you know, you look at the Broncos lineup. If you are a fantasy owner outside of Denver, outside of Colorado, mm-hmm. you are a gambler outside of Denver, outside of Colorado, and you're looking for a bet on a game, or you're looking to do a prop bet, if you had to pick who the leading wide receiver, who the leading pass catcher is for the Broncos on Sunday, who are you gambling on?
Noah Fant.
What did I just write down?
Noah Fant.
There you go.
He's your, right now, even though his position says tight end.
That's right.
He's your wide receiver one.
That's my point exactly.
Because he can break a game open. And we've seen it.
Yep.
He can turn something short into something big in a way that Cortland Sutton, still working his way back, and Tim Patrick, who's good at going up and getting the ball, but it is generally not going to turn a 15-yard pass into a 45 or 50-yard gain. Fant has that explosive capability about him.
Here's the thing. When you look at wide receivers, you think, boy, big numbers. Well, you know what? Darren Waller puts up huge numbers. And Kelsey puts up huge numbers. And who's on his team? Oh, yeah, Tyreek Hill.
There's room for Noah Fant and Tim Patrick to clean up.
There's room for Noah Fant and Jerry Jeudy to clean up.
Yeah.
There's room for Fant and Sutton to clean up. Fant should absolutely be a top option for you. I mean, when you look at the Raiders yesterday, and do the Raiders know that they used a first-round pick on Henry Ruggs? Do they know that?
Yeah, we were wrong about that, weren't we?
I got to tell you something.
46, at the end of the game, I'm like, he only had 2 for 46.
Well, it was at the end of the game. I don't want to say it was garbage time because
no, there was no garbage.
Right,
it was high leverage.
Came back.
It was high leverage time. If anything, it showed that what Ruggs did late should show they should get him the ball earlier.
My point is, Ruggs was the first wide receiver taken off the board in a wide receiver rich draft. What the hell is John Gruden thinking? Now you can make the case that Baltimore's defensive secondary was great in coverage. Well, maybe Henry Ruggs needs to be a better route runner, kind of like Jerry Jeudy, because with that type of speed, no one should truly be able to cover him. Mm-hmm. So, getting back to the Broncos, looking at Noah Fant, this guy should have a day, because when I look at that Jaguars roster, do you see a guy who can really cover him?
No.
By the way, we're going to talk more about this tomorrow.
The Broncos should be disappointed if they don't get at least 30 points in this game.
What's the spread on this game? Six?
5.5.
5.5? I think all of us should jump and put big money on this, and I'll tell you why. It has nothing to do with the matchup. You know what it has to do with? I don't think Urban Meyer really gives a crap about this game. I think he's looking to find a way to get out, and he's not putting in the effort.
He's not even doing the media conference call with Denver Media.
I know.
This week.
I know.
Which is, in a normal year, a non-COVID year, is basically a first. That's basically unheard of.
I can't remember the last time.
Because he knows we would ask him questions like, hey, you were part of hiring Steve Adazio at CSU. What do you think of how he's doing so far?
You know what? He's a better coach. I texted a friend of mine, and I'll tell you who it is in the break, who understands college football as well as anyone. He's an athletic director at a major conference. And we were talking about Urban Meyer.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'll tell you this about Urban Meyer. He's a better coach, certainly, than he is at giving references, because he sucks at that. He's terrible at that, right?
I mean, Adazio is proving to be a complete bust. Yeah. In Fort Collins, and he was part of the team making that hire.
Right.
I mean, you can't even beat Vanderbilt, which lost to East Tennessee the week before at home.
Didn't they score 3 points against East Tennessee?
Yes.
3 points.
Scored 3 points against East Tennessee, did Vanderbilt. I mean, it was bad enough losing to South Dakota State, but at least South Dakota State's a really good FCS team. Yeah, it's. I'm not saying you should ever lose to a team like that, but Vanderbilt... Vanderbilt will probably, if you put Vanderbilt in the Mountain West, they would probably finish ninth. That's a bad, bad loss.
So where's that put Colorado State?
Colorado's in the dumpster?
No, I mean, if a Vandy's nine, where's that put Colorado State?
Probably 11 or 12, and doing so with somebody who was recommended to them by Urban Meyer.
Great.
And that's, Urban Meyer had some, maybe Urban Meyer knew that he had some things to answer for in the conference call with Colorado media and didn't want any part of it.
I apologize for saying this because we are the rights holder for Colorado State and we support Colorado State athletics, but I covered Kansas State a couple years after they were voted the worst team of the decade.
Yeah.
In the 1980s, they were the worst team of the decade.
Remember it well.
And they will come out, somebody will come out with the best college football teams in the country. They'll go from first to last. And if Colorado State does not finish in the bottom five, I will be stunned. Because I don't know who you honestly put behind them. It's certainly not Vanderbilt, because Vanderbilt usually locks up the bottom five. I understand that they play in a conference where they're going to lose a lot of games.
Mm-hmm.
But that was ridiculous. Coming up after the break, Chiefs, undefeated. Chargers, undefeated. Broncos, undefeated. Raiders, undefeated. Everybody talks about the NFC West being the toughest division in football. Is it? That's next.
Afternoon Drive with Goodman and Mason, presented by Silter Har Mazda. A no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Andrew.
Welcome back, Afternoon Drive. Goodman Mason. Watch us at MileHighSports.com. You can reach us, Rocky Mountain Forest Products Twitter feed, at Mace Denver, at Eric Goodman. If you are looking for wholesale lumber to the public for your next project, go to RMFP.com. Time now for What's Trending.
What's Trending is presented by Hot Tub Outlet. As other hot tub stores in town make you wait 12 weeks, get your new hot tub today at Hot Tub Outlet in Littleton or go to HotTubOutletDenver.com.
Look at the AFC East. Each division has four teams. Three of those teams are 0-1. AFC North, two of the teams are 0-1. AFC South, three of the teams are 0-1. AFC West, every team is 1-0.
Tied for first, tied for last.
NFC, three of the teams in the East are winless. NFC North, every team lost the opening week.
Some of them quite badly.
NFC South, three teams are 1-0. NFC West, all four teams are 1-0. A little surprised that all the teams in the AFC West are undefeated. I know it's 1 week.
Not really, no, because I picked them all to win.
So you felt the Raiders would beat the Ravens?
I thought the Raiders would beat the Ravens. And that was a pick I wasn't willing to make until the Marcus Peters injury.
Right.
Last week.
Right.
And you could see they exploited the fact that the Ravens were a key man short in the secondary, and that's why that's something to watch going forward until the Ravens adapt. The Chargers, I wasn't surprised with how their game with Washington went. I thought Washington would mostly contain their offense, and it did, because Washington's front seven is arguably the best in football. But Justin Herbert made enough plays to counter that, and they got a very good, solid, tough road win. And then Kansas City beating Cleveland. Yeah, Cleveland's a great team, but it's still Kansas City at home, Patrick Mahomes.
You know who's going to be a problem for the Broncos with the Chargers? And I'm not talking about Justin Herbert.
Who?
Rashawn Slater.
Yeah.
A guy they were very, very interested in. If Surtain was not on the board, I was told Rashawn Slater, the offensive tackle out of Northwestern, was the guy they wanted. The knock on him was
short arms.
But you know how
he looked good.
He looked really good against that Washington pass rush, didn't he? He did a very nice job protecting Justin Herbert against two of the better pass rushers in the league and certainly one of the best tandems in the league.
The question for the Chargers every year is, can they stay healthy? Because what they have put together, and especially that defense, should be a lot better schematically. With that defense combined with Justin Herbert being one of those guys at quarterback that you can build around, he looked like there was no drop off. He looked even better than he did last year.
The thing
that team, the Chargers are dangerous.
Yeah,
very dangerous.
Well, this is what
the Broncos could have a really good year and be a third place team and make the playoffs.
They could be a fourth place team. Okay, it's only week one, and I totally get it. Okay, totally understand it. The Chiefs, we know they have Mahomes and Kelce and Tyreek Hill, and their offense is explosive, period, and their offensive line is much better. We don't need to spend any time on the Chiefs. We know who they are. As for the Chargers, they went up against an excellent defense. Excellent defense. And the Broncos will see this defense. And Justin Herbert still completed 66% of his passes for 337 yards. Still did that. They only scored 20 points, but I don't think a lot of teams are scoring 24 against Washington this year. What concerns me about the Raiders is, even though I don't think they have that great of a team, they did what the Chiefs did. They showed resiliency, and they came back. They should have lost that game. Now, they should have won it, and then, you know, at the very, very end, you know, when it was so funny. We'll talk about this later on in the show. How much of the, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on it now, but you watched the Manning boys, didn't you?
Off and on. We'll get into that a little bit later.
Okay.
The style of broadcast.
But I'm gonna bring up one point that Eli Manning brought up. I mean, Peyton did the majority of the talking. They had Russell Wilson on at that time. And Eli said when the ball was first and goal at the 1 yard line, Eli said, whatever you do, Derek Carr, don't have a hard count. And sure enough, Derek Carr with the hard count, and boom, they went back 5 yards.
You had a rookie who made a mistake on the hard count. I actually tweeted out.
No. He blamed that on Carr.
Well, no, but the thing is, the rookie is more likely to bite on the hard count. But there was no reason to do that in that scenario. Nothing good was going.
That's what Eli said
was going to happen. Remember, it's not just a rookie and Alex Leatherwood tackle. You've shaken up the entire offensive line for this season. Okay, so you have basically a new offensive line with Derek Carr. That's where you say, don't try to get cute. There's no point to this here. Just take the snap. A veteran offensive line that doesn't make mistakes. That's where you'd probably be fine doing it. With what the Raiders had, that was a mistake, and then it led to the ball going through Willie Snead's hands and off the helmet and getting picked off. I mean, the whole thing was very Raiders until Carl Nassib had the strip sack fumble, made the play of the game.
You know what's so Raiders? I'm looking this up right now. I mean, I know the guy's name, but I just want to see what that draft looked like. The Raiders, with the 4th overall pick in the 2019 draft, selected Cleveland Farrell.
Who was inactive last night.
Was a healthy scratch. That's why Mike Mayock could be short on this job. And I'm guessing he was sweating it, because every loss, his foot goes further and further out the door.
You know, the funny thing is, one of the reasons why Cleveland Farrell isn't playing is because they have a mid-round pick at the same position, Max Crosby, who is simply better.
Yeah.
And then they have a guy they sign off the street, Carl Nassib, who's their rotational defensive end, who is simply better, and both of them made plays last night.
To me,
but the thing is, it was obvious to everybody but the Raiders that they should have, if they were going to draft an edge rusher, they should have drafted Josh Allen, who went to Jacksonville, and instead they chose Cleveland Farrell. People were shocked by the pick. I think the Raiders are a classic example of a team that, in terms of their drafting, are too cute. Josh Allen has 14 sacks in 25 games played in his career. He's off to a good start. That's the guy the Raiders should have picked.
I was texting back and forth with Mike Pritchard, who covers the Raiders now. Mm-hmm. We were talking about Ruggs.
Yeah.
And I said, what the hell is going on here? I know that, listen, the Ravens secondary was short yesterday. Mm-hmm. I understand that. But they were covering pretty well. And I said, why aren't they throwing the ball to Ruggs? And you and I were driving out of here, or we were driving home, when apparently I was told that Derek Carr tried to hook up with Ruggs but overthrew him in the game. And I said to Pritch, why in the world aren't they getting Ruggs more involved? I mean, talk about a guy who can stretch the field for you, make him a threat, stop making him a decoy, make him an actual threat, and then you're opening up the middle of the field for Darren Waller. And he said, well, Ruggs is one-dimensional. I said, well, then use that dimension. Or just come out and say we totally blew it on the pick. You don't have to say it, but everybody will know it. How in the world is this guy not involved in the offense? It is mind-boggling to me. And you know what? If you want, you knew you were getting a one-dimensional player. You knew that. Kind of like KJ Hamler is a one-dimensional player. He flies down the field, and you hope he can outrace the defense.
And Broncos would have, if Jerry Jeudy had been off the board, but Henry Ruggs would have been on the board. They were very intrigued by Henry Ruggs.
They were.
Even though he was a one-dimensional guy. They end up getting their speed guy in the second round. All was well that ended well.
Right. What do we have coming up on Mountain High Appliance, just in case you missed it?
The Rockies, coming off a hot series in Philly, are taking on the Braves in Atlanta. We'll look a little bit at that game. Also, a new deal for one of the Nuggets' newest players. Who got an extension and for how much? That's on the other side right here on Afternoon Drive with Goodman and Mason on Mile High Sports.
And and Mason, presented by Silter Har Mazda, a no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Andrew.
Welcome back. Afternoon Drive. Goodman Mason. Watch us at MileHighSports.com. You can reach us, Rocky Mountain Forest Products Twitter feed, at Mace Denver, at Eric Goodman. If you are looking for wholesale lumber to the public, go to RMFP.com. In the meantime, Eric Bieniemy is back in the news. According to our friend Adam Schefter from ESPN, put out a tweet a couple of hours ago. League sources believe that Eric Bieniemy will emerge as a head coaching candidate for USC. Bieniemy is from Southern California and has told confidants in the past that USC is one of the only college jobs that might interest him. I can tell you through an impeccable source, this will not happen, and I can say this with 100% certainty. I would bet my life on it, that Eric Bieniemy won't even get an interview. Forget about getting hired. He will not get an interview, and if he does get an interview, it would be because they're looking to hire, they'll be looking to interview a minority candidate. That's the only reason why. But he will not get this job under any circumstances.
Eric Bieniemy, you find yourself kind of parsing your words carefully, but Eric Bieniemy, he keeps coming up in the in these speculations just because he is the Kansas City offensive coordinator. But diving into the past, you know, the arrests, the incidents that he's had.
Forget about that. Let's cut right to the chase. Let's cut right to the chase. Eric Bieniemy was an unmitigated disaster as Colorado's offensive coordinator under John Embry.
The whole program was an unmitigated disaster.
But he, as a person, was an unmitigated disaster at Colorado as the offensive coordinator. And who was the athletic director at that time?
Mike Bone.
And who's the athletic director at USC?
Mike Bone.
Time now for the final word.
The final word. Are you ready? Presented by Refresh Snoring and Sleep Apnea Center. Eric, stop snoring and you can too. Go to refreshedsleep.com. Just in case you missed it. Presented by Mountain High Appliance, Colorado's favorite appliance store for 25 years in Louisville, Colorado Springs, and now open in their new store in Littleton. Go to mountainhighappliance.com.
Just in case you missed it, the Rockies on the road still taking on the Braves in Atlanta. 5:20 p.m. Mountain Time is when first pitch is scheduled for that one. It'll be John Gray versus Touki Toussaint, the pitching matchup. Rockies just took 3 out of 4 off the Phillies in the city of brotherly love. Do they continue their winning ways tonight?
I'm going to say that they will. And yes, I'm probably doing this just as I pick against the Lightning when they're in the playoffs. I'm picking against the team that I want to win. I don't care. But the Rockies, you look at what they've done on the road. And obviously this year, they've been atrocious on the road. But like you mentioned, Danny, they've won three of the last four. The previous six road games, they split 3-3, and then before that lost 2 out of 3 to the Cubs. They have not been the disaster on the road for the past basically month and a half to 2 months that they were in the first half of the season. They're playing, played good ball against the Phillies this past weekend. And oh, by the way, the Rockies, I believe the Rockies have a winning record against the NL East this year, if I'm not mistaken. They have a terrible record against the NL West. They have a winning record against everybody else, including the NL East. Wouldn't surprise me if the Rockies take this one tonight.
Wouldn't be surprised at all either.
Just in case you missed it, Aaron Gordon and the Denver Nuggets have agreed to a 4-year extension for $92 million, according to Shams Charania, and the fourth-year player option in 2025-2026 for Aaron Gordon. Your reaction to the deal, and are you surprised the Nuggets extended Gordon before MPJ?
No, I'm not, and by the way, the money that he got a 20% pay hike. That's all he got. So when you look at the... when you look at the overall contract, it's not like he got some substantial raise either. They like Aaron Gordon. When Aaron Gordon got there and he started playing, Jamal Murray was playing, and I think the Nuggets felt they were the best team in basketball at the time. They're not counting on Aaron Gordon to be a scorer. They want him for his defensive presence. They like him. They think he's a good locker room guy. He fits in well. I am not surprised. They're in no rush to sign MPJ. They wanted to get Aaron Gordon done.
They have another year also with MPJ. Mm-hmm.
That's right. So Gordon's going to play out the final year of his contract. Then he gets his four-year extension. The reason why there's no rush on MPJ, let's see how he plays. There's a history with Aaron Gordon. What if MPJ gets injured? What if he doesn't play well? You're really going to max out a guy right now? I wouldn't. Granted, you're rolling the dice that if he's great, he's going to look for a max deal. But I think that Tim Connelly's playing this the right way.
The other thing is, if they're willing to go beyond the luxury tax threshold, then getting MPJ in won't be a problem. And so you take this year, even part of this season, to find out if he can build on what he's done. He's got a great opportunity just because they're going to rely on him more. He's going to be thrown into the fire without Jamal Murray out there for the first two-thirds of the season. If he does well, you've got your answer. You go ahead, you happily sign him up, and basically you've got your core at that point. If MPJ steps up, you've got your core four players that are going to guide you somewhere, you hope.
Just in case you missed it, over the weekend, the Arkansas Razorbacks pulled off a big-time upset over 15th-ranked Texas. The Longhorns went down 21-40 to Arkansas, and then the fans stormed the field. $100,000 fine for Arkansas from the SEC. Is there ever a time where the conferences should allow for the fans to show their appreciation and jubilation in the form of storming the field?
Not anymore. Not right now. Not with a Delta variant out there.
What if they all have masks or face masks? What if they all have face masks?
And well,
I'm talking about like football face masks.
Football face masks wouldn't do you any good.
Ba-dum-bum.
Yeah. I mean, it's not something you want anyway, but I think in another time that maybe you'd let it slide and say just say jubilation. But with not knowing, if you open the stadium, and if you're not doing it like the Raiders and a few other teams where you're saying everyone has to have proof of vaccination or proof of a negative COVID test in the previous 24 hours, if you're not doing that, then there is actually a danger and a health consequence potentially to everyone storming the field, and all of a sudden you may end up having a bunch of players test positive for COVID, which affects your chances of winning as a team. So I think they're perfectly within their rights right now to fine them.
And that we saw a little bit of a problem with that last year at Notre Dame.
Yes.
As well.
And the students got scolded pretty heavily for coming down on the field after they beat Clemson.
All right, that was Mountain High Appliance. Just in case you missed, you want to talk about an experienced sales staff. They can help you design an entire kitchen. They can help you with something to fit your budget. You go into a big box store, they can sell you one piece at a time. That is not the specialty at big box stores. All due respect to them, but I want to work with people who've been doing this for a long time that have the experience. Instead of somebody selling me, a stove or a refrigerator, and then wheeling me over to pick up an iPhone charger. Totally different experience. Work with people who know exactly what they're doing to get you what you want. Mountain High Appliance, you can find them in Louisville, Littleton. You can also find their clearance center in Denver. We touched on this briefly yesterday. Von Miller talked to Teddy Bridgewater on the sidelines during the Giants game. And what he said was as strong as anything I've ever heard come out of Von Miller's mouth. With that, how much does this validate Vangio's decision to start Bridgewater? And does this also say something about Drew Lock? That's next.